and even distasteful. So inured to this sort of treatment, and so humble in the face of it, is the public that the propagators have gotten away with it up to this moment. I don't know how much longer they'll continue to get away with it, but meanwhile they're paying for it. Such advertising, like narcotics, must be administered in ever-increasing doses to achieve the same effect. There is, as I have suggested, reason to believe that they can afford it, but the rest of advertising cannot. Because what happens is that all of advertising suffers thereby. Just as we use the word advertising to include everything from telephone solicitation for Arthur Murray and sound trucks to sponsorship of the Metropolitan Opera, so does the public at large. As a consequence, there is an irritation factor. The irritation factor introduced by boring or shoddy advertising, and it infects all of advertising. However, irritations, as we know, do not continue indefinitely. They become endemic. Eventually, the body becomes immune to them. And so it happens, the quite legitimate, if dull, advertising has become subject to this immunity. And that, I suggest, is the principal reason why advertising expenditures generally increase with no marked increase in effectiveness. I don't think I'm overstating this. During the 1950s, the gross national product increased 53%, the greatest quantitative growth in our history. That this was not mostly inflationary is shown by the fact that during the same period, the consumer price index only rose 18%. However, and this is the point, during the same period, the total advertising bill rose over 100%. On the face of it, it took four times as much advertising to sell twice as much goods. But these figures don't tell the whole story. As a matter of fact, they're deceptive. At least I hope they are, because if they're not, they would dampen advertising's overweening belief that it makes the wheels of our economy go round. Not that I understand just how our economy works either. Every explanation I've ever heard makes it sound like a giant chain letter. You just know all you're going to hope is that your name gets to the top of the list before somebody gets wise and the whole thing falls apart. Anyway, I suspect that the relationship between total advertising expenditures and the gross national product is a very flimsy one indeed, and for a simple reason. I would estimate that over 50% of the $12 billion spent on advertising last year was devoted to products such as soap, cosmetics, aspirin compounds, cigarettes, beverages, and mind you, I'm not speaking in terribly derogatory terms here. What Walter said about the products we handle, we make most of our money out of booze. And breakfast foods, products which account for a minute percentage of the gross national product and involve an even smaller percentage of the total labor force. I wouldn't be surprised if it was as little as 3 or 4%. This is not to dispute the right of these products to advertise, but merely to point out that they do, in fact, do most of the advertising. This is simply because they have more money to spend on it and need it more. It is essential to their existence, though not necessarily to ours, since most of it is for product categories we wouldn't conceivably be without anyway. I once dwelt on this subject at length on a TV panel discussion, and one of the other panelists, the head of an agency, took exception and said that he knew for a fact that if Procter & Gamble, for example, stopped advertising, that their sales would decrease maybe 25% in the first year. I said, I wonder whether anybody would be any dirtier. So I think it's obvious why the bulk of advertising is for relatively non-essential products. They are the ones who can best afford to advertise. Unfortunately, they are also likely to put out the most intrusive advertising. They have so much opportunity, and the temptation is too strong to resist. There is every indication that self-interested advertising, without regard to the audience's sensibilities, works. It's like shooting fish in a barrel. However, aside from the fact that it isn't very sporting to shoot fish in a barrel, The fish aren't holding still the way they used to. It takes more ammunition all the time. I think this is partly due to simple boredom on the individual's part and a growing awareness that he doesn't have to tolerate thoughtless intrusions on his privacy. The first thing we, and I'll include myself in the audience, the first thing we ought to demand from advertising or indeed from any message directed toward us is that it get our permission before speaking, that it not collar us at inappropriate times or places, that it be thoughtful of us, that it not interrupt. This is no more than we expect from friends or family, so why take it from outsiders? This right, like so many other personal rights, is only enforceable personally. People are entitled to just as much freedom from annoying intrusions as they are prepared to insist on or can conceive of. Privacy as a general concept is a little hard to grasp, or maybe it's just harder for Americans to grasp. Talking about privacy has been and continues to be alien to our culture. We tend to equate privacy with loneliness, which isn't the same thing at all. Loneliness is when you haven't got anything to be private from. Perhaps we ought to define privacy more closely here. To have privacy is not to be a recluse, away from society, but to be able to preserve one's identity within society. This ability we might call a sense of privacy. An extremely gregarious person may have a high sense of privacy with well-developed resistance to intrusion. A recluse, on the other hand, may well have a very poor sense of privacy, which is why he has to become a recluse, I guess. Since he can't screen out intrusions any other way, he bolts the door. In any event, privacy is meaningless without a sense of privacy to defend it. I think that this sense of privacy is growing, and with it, an immunity to intrusive advertising. Back to the fish in the barrel people, I think it's begun to dawn on some of them that this is getting to be a pretty expensive way to operate. As a result, we see some feeble attempts at entertainment, but you somehow feel their hearts aren't really in it. They think about the audience the way the man did who said of his wife, "I didn't want to marry her for her money, but it was the only way I could get it." In view of all this, it's small wonder that when advertising says, "Hello out there," it's with the same sort of trepidation that a woman alone at night feels when she says, "Who's there?" What if somebody should answer back? There is in advertising an actual dread of direct confrontation of the audience that bears more than a slight resemblance to stage fright. They would, I'm sure, think it delicious to have the audience in the palm of their hand. But what if it should flop?